This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. My thanks to Sandra Rios for filling in for me yesterday while I was in New York City. I'm going to continue the conversation that began here on Washington Watch yesterday about the meeting between evangelical leaders and Donald Trump. I want to get the perspective of a few individuals who were in the meeting, and then I want to get your thoughts on what Donald Trump needs to do to connect with conservative Christian voters, if he can. I want to know what you think a little bit later when we open up the phone lines. We're going to hear today from Ken Blackwell, former mayor of Cincinnati and U.S. ambassador to the United Nations Human Rights Commission. He'll give us his take, as will a former pastor and now Congressman Mark Walker of North Carolina. He was there. We're going to talk with him. And we'll get the perspective of San Antonio pastor Steve Branson. All that and more here on this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. The website is TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's guest as well as our topic. A few resources up there for you. Last night, I was on Megyn Kelly talking about the meeting. I was on Fox this morning as well and MSNBC last night. But you can actually watch the Megyn Kelly clip of that interview from last night on the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins, you can follow me with what's happening there on Twitter. All right, what may be the largest assembly of social conservative leaders in a generation took place yesterday in New York City for a conversation with GOP presumptive presidential nominee Donald Trump. Now, this is something I talked about it on Monday at great lengths. Bill Dallas with United in Purpose, CEO, we do a lot of work with him. He and I had a conversation after it looked like Donald Trump was going to be moving toward the nomination, about pulling together social conservative leaders, evangelicals, to have a conversation. I say social conservative. Let me give a definition there. There were conservative Catholics that were there as well, so it's not just all evangelicals. Social conservatives, those who believe biblical truths and principles and morals apply to the policy that governs our nation. So it was a large gathering, probably the largest in a generation. We thought when we started in this process that we would have maybe 400 or 500. Well, as I mentioned, over 1,000 gathered yesterday for what was about a 90-plus minute question and answer time with Donald Trump. There was a lot of other things that went into yesterday's program, but 90-plus minutes with Donald Trump, where we covered a number of issues. Several of us asked questions of him on a number of issues, but they focused very heavily on religious freedom. Now, the vast majority of those gathered were pastors and ministry leaders, but there were a number of seasoned conservative political leaders that were also in the room, and one of those joins me now. Ken Blackwell is an FRC Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance. He's the former Secretary of State for Ohio and U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Human Rights Commission. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Always good to be with you, sir.
All right. Are you you back in the Queen City?
Back in the Queen City, going up to Columbus, and then on my way to Cleveland to sort of map out all of the coordinates that we were going to have to follow for both the Council for National Policy meeting and then the GOP convention.
Yeah, we got a big month ahead with both the Council for National Policy, which I serve as president of, and the RNC convention, which I'll be on the platform committee. Of course, Ken will be on the ground there as well. Hey, let's talk about this meeting yesterday with Donald Trump. You've been through a number of presidential campaigns. You've been around a lot of presidents and presidential candidates. What was your biggest takeaway from yesterday's gathering?
I think we've engaged Mr. Trump in a thoughtful process around some very, very important issues. There are those of us who have still some questions that need to be resolved. There are others who have committed themselves to the Trump candidacy. And there are still some others that are very, very critical of those of us who are thoughtful and still thinking it through, and those who have already signed up with Donald Trump. I was inspired by the unity in the room. not just the interaction between Donald Trump and the social conservative leaders, but by the intentionality of the whole process. You and Bill Dallas and the other folks who really did spearhead this, is to be commended, because as important as Mr. Trump's commitment to religious liberty, reforming the federal court system back to a less activist court and back to a court along the federal lines that will look at originalism and respect the separation of powers, I was impressed by the fact that we had unified to the point of being able to have the conversation and communicate to Mr. Trump that, look, we do a lot of work together. We've been on the ground for decades now trying to reform the system and bring it back in line with biblical truth. And I think he got the point that, you know, we are not somebody that will be easily dismissed, or somebody that will be, let's say, a collective Trump chump. Mm-hmm. We are thoughtful activists and committed Christians who want to see American exceptionalism restored.
Well, I thought it was clearly a connection point with him. And, I mean, a lot of people very skeptical, I mean, wanting to be for him. And that's what I attribute this large turnout, is a lot of people wanted to be for him or want to be for him. And so they wanted to come to see if they could resolve the concerns that they had. And I think he connected, you know, he hit very hard multiple times the issue of religious liberty, that, you know, he would protect people's right to live according to their beliefs. But I also think there was an underlying, not necessarily articulated, but it was kind of referenced, and that was how, you know, he is attacked by the media and the left for not towing a politically correct line. And of all of the, you know, segments of society that can identify with that, that's the evangelical community that lives by a standard that is transcendent, that is not, they're not going to yield up to the political correctness of the day, and they've been hammered. And so I think that was a point of common ground between the two.
You're absolutely right. And I think, one, the leaders in that room, they know that we need an alternative to Hillary Clinton. And there will be people who will go to the polls in November, and they will vote against Hillary. There was a desire in that room to find reasons to be not just against Hillary, but for Donald Trump. And I think he took some very positive steps towards getting us there. On the other hand, I think there's a realization right now that he had a very unconventional primary, and he is lacking the infrastructure nationwide to go up against the Clinton machine. Network of institutions, individuals, and activists that can do it is, in fact, the network of churches and the social conservative organizations across the country. You know, not just those in favor of advancing religious liberty or restoring that concept to our day-to-day lives, but folks who are big defenders of the Second Amendment, who get categorized as social conservatives or cultural conservatives, what have you. So, look, we have a network. He needs that network in order to beat Hillary Clinton, and we need to help him understand that there's no accident that there are more Republican and conservative governors in this country than there are tree-hugging liberals. And there are more state legislatures or chambers of state legislatures controlled by Republicans and conservatives, and that's because we have been busy at the grassroots level. This is a pointed and on target, and that is that platform that got us there, you know, is something that means something to that network that he needs, and he needs to let us know early on that he's committed to it.
To the GOP platform, their conservative platform. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, joined by Ken Blackwell, discussing yesterday's meeting between evangelical conservative leaders and Donald Trump that took place in New York City. I want to address an issue. First off, I want to say the group that pulled this together, UIP and My Faith Votes, and of course FRC Action, our organization was a part of, along with others. We've also issued an invitation. These are 501c3 organizations, issued an invitation to Hillary Clinton to have the same conversation. We're waiting for a response. Hadn't heard yet back yet, but this was not an endorsement. This was, as we have been very clear about, a conversation. He made some comments in an earlier meeting that I did not hear in our meeting, and I was kind of tagged with this or asked about it in a couple of the media interviews last night, where he was criticizing Hillary Clinton's faith or religious activity or lack thereof. And of course, my response was, and you kind of touched on this yesterday as well in the press conference that we had post-event, I don't think Donald Trump needs to nor should make this a religious contest. I mean, this is a contest for honoring the Constitution and those first freedoms of protecting religious liberty. I mean, Donald Trump does not have commonality, I think, when it comes to the practice of the Christian faith with the evangelical leaders. He's open to it. He's not hostile to it, which is refreshing given what we've seen in the last 7.5 years, where it's been almost a daily pounding of an administration that is hostile to religious liberty. But this is a contest for the Constitution.
Absolutely. And that's why the court is so, so important. That's why, you know, as you know, I always talk about the rule of law, not just as it applies to us within a cultural context, but within an economic context. One of the reasons we've had the success that we've had economically and why we are the most prosperous nation in the history of the world is because we have had the rule of law, and that has in fact given a predictability to a free market system.
Right.
It has only been, you know, with this in the last 7.5 years, this attack on the rule of law, the Constitution, and this notion that we should be on this path to socialism.
Right.
And we found ourselves with a very, very low labor participation rate, almost a historic low.
Yeah.
In recent memory, as well as the number of people are just sensing a hopelessness when it comes to the opportunity to work.
All right, we got to leave it there. Ken Blackwell, as always, great to have you on the program. It was good to see you yesterday in New York City.
Yes, sir. Good to be with you.
All right, it's Ken Blackwell, and you know, he's mentioning the rule of law. Eric Metaxas spoke yesterday. He's got a new book out, If You Can Keep It. In fact, I'm going to have him on coming up on the program there in a couple of weeks, but anyway, I'll talk about that more on the other side of the break. Don't go away. Mark Walker, congressman from North Carolina, joins us when we return.
Are you prepared to stand for real change? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Join thousands of like-minded Americans who envision a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at the Values Voter Summit have included Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Mike Huckabee, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dr. Ben Carson, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Ollie North, Mark Levin, and many others. In addition, there will be ample opportunity to network and meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, government overreach, and more. On September 9th through 11th, stand with us and fight for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to watch last year's event. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others. And that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we notice with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
In the book of Isaiah, the word tells us the grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God endures forever. In the same way, without careful planning, your financial goals could blow away like the seeds of a dandelion. It's never too early or too late to consider how a charitable gift annuity can help you meet the financial goals you've set for your loved ones, your causes, and yourself. Give AFA Foundation a call at 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit our website, afafoundation.net. Let us explain how a charitable gift annuity can help you achieve your goals. As we read in Proverbs, the plans of the diligent lead to profit. Our phone number again is 800-326-4543, extension 345. And our website is afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. Been a long week already. I was just mentioning before the break, one of the kind of closing speakers we had. We had a panel yesterday that I moderated with a number of participants, and then we discussed with the whole group. But then Eric McTaxis, who has a new book out, If You Can Keep It, about our republic. And this the unique nature of this, and I was just reflecting on that when Ken was talking about the rule of law, because Eric made the point yesterday that, you know, the rule of law, faith is central to it, religion, Christian faith, central to the rule of law. And once you push that out and marginalize it and extinguish it, as we've seen under this administration, you know, lawlessness runs rampant. And of course, we're witnessing that right now. And that's why protecting religious freedom and allowing the free exercise thereof is so important. All right. In the last decade, we have actually seen the House of Representatives become more conservative. Yes, I know look, the House is a very conservative, probably the most conservative we've had maybe in history. I don't know. But we've seen more and more evangelical Christians have successfully run for Congress and are serving. Now, they, too, were interested in the conversation with Donald Trump, and some actually came up to New York for yesterday's meeting. And one of the members of Congress who joined us is Mark Walker. He's a former Baptist pastor who now represents the 6th Congressional District of North Carolina. Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Mr. Perkins. Appreciate you having us on today.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this. I want to get I know as a former pastor— or one that I would probably not former, but you're not pastoring a church, but you still have the heart of a minister. But let's talk about your perspective from that, as well as a member of Congress. What did you think was significant about yesterday's gathering?
Well, I think a couple things jumped out at me yesterday. One was the fact that the evangelicals mean enough to Mr. Trump that he's willing to come in and put himself out there and answer the questions. Obviously, it's not the most familiar world that he's in, but at the same time, to show that effort that he is willing and wanting to learn was impressive to me. The second aspect of this is I don't remember time, and I was involved in Southern Baptist Convention for many years, even a worship pastor for the president for a little while, I don't ever remember a time where so many evangelicals from different backgrounds, denominations, came together under one roof. And as I've thought about that, talked to other members today, I believe there is a movement, or should I say an understanding, that we are facing an assault on religious liberties like never before. And I think it is driving the church together to lock arm in arm to look for some champions who are willing to speak on the people's behalf.
That's exactly the way I see it. I mean, there is this existential threat that is out there, and you are absolutely right. You had charismatic, Pentecostal, mainline, Baptist, non-denominational. It was the largest gathering I know of in a generation of evangelical leaders. And it was interesting, almost immediately, Donald Trump zeroed in on the religious liberty issue. I mean, he knew who he was speaking to, obviously, but he made some very strong statements, and that, I think, is what many of these leaders were looking for. I mean, let me ask you, what was your take on his focus on the issue of religious liberty?
I was impressed that he even made it an issue, and it's telling me that he's paying attention to some of the things that are going on. I was in the House floor standing in the well weeks ago when the names bigot, racist, the chance of shame, just because Republicans were trying and stood up that particular evening for organizations that have religious beliefs they've cherished for decades. And some of these organizations are the people who do the greatest work in the inner cities, that they go in and hold the hands of AIDS patients, that try to place children in proper home structures. And this is coming from supposedly the tolerant crowd. So
right.
I think Mr. Trump is paying attention to that and understanding the battle that we're facing right now.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, Congressman Mark Walker of North Carolina, my guest. You know what? I was just talking in the previous segment about that. I think a point of connection with Donald Trump and evangelical leaders, not theological, I don't think it's a faith connection, but I think it's a connection of understanding of how he's been vilified for simply standing and speaking what is clearly evident common sense, but it's not politically correct. And there's not another segment of the society that's been more vilified and attacked than the evangelical community for refusing to yield up their transcendent beliefs to political correctness.
Absolutely. And even when the president recently decided to pass out a decree or a mandate that all children would get to choose and pick, we immediately fired back a letter, and I think Mr. Trump was aware of that, asking the president, how does he plan to enforce that? Why would you put a teacher in a situation that's a lose-lose when she feels like there may be a safety concern? Get beyond the transgender aspect of it. Why would we even do that to our educators who are already in some classrooms struggling to keep order?
Right.
Now we've added an additional complication because the mandate actually said the student gets to override both the parents and the teacher's discretion. I'm amazed that there's not even a larger outcry, but I'm very grateful that, as you said, there's a commonality with Mr. Trump being attacked and now our religious liberties being so, that I think it is bringing the church together in a way that we've probably not seen, I know, in our generation.
Congressman Walker, up against a break, but one final question for you. Did you leave more comfortable with Donald Trump as the presumptive GOP nominee?
Yes, we did, and that seemed to be the consensus of the people that I talked with. Are there still some, we're still working through some questions. I think the honest answer is yes, and that's due to some of just Mr. Trump, still working through some of the raw aspects of not being a politician. But I think there's a chance, and listen, the alternative certainly offends me a whole lot more.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. Congressman Mark Walker, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks, Tony. Have a good day.
All right. Okay, folks, when we come back, I'm going to get the perspective of a pastor, Pastor Steve Branson, who's in San Antonio, Texas, who's been fighting kind of the liberal agenda down there and actually winning. He's going to talk to us about what he thought from yesterday's gathering. Don't go away. We're back with more right after this.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
We would lose 3.5 million jobs, incomes would stagnate, debt would explode, and stock prices would plummet. And you know who'd be hit the hardest? The people who had the hardest time getting back on their feet after the 2008 crisis.
Sounds like she's talking about President Obama, right? That's what I was thinking. No, she's talking about Donald Trump. And she talked about the people that had the hardest time getting back on their feet. She must be living in the same twilight zone as the president, thinking that those people that got hit the hardest in 2008 and 2009 are somehow back on their feet. As a matter of fact, the vast majority of them dropped out of the workforce. She's talking about the debt would explode. The debt has already exploded. We've seen Obamanomics double the debt that we've created from George Washington to George Bush. It's already exploded. She's talking about wage stagnation. There has not been any wage increases since this president has been in office. And the idea that 3.5 million people were to lose their job, that would almost be a good thing compared to how many people have lost their job or dropped out of the workforce under this administration, that she has already embraced the economic plan of this president. She's already a part of the ideology of the economic plan of this president, and she is only going to create more of that economic plan and that strategy and that ideology that has driven this economy into the ground. I think it's a very weak case for Hillary Clinton to continue to talk about economics until she comes out and says that she didn't support anything that President Obama has done.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
The website is TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. Let me once again remind you that this program comes to you because of folks like you who are willing to become partners with the Family Research Council in Washington, Washington. To find out more how you can partner with us and get this message out to more people across this nation, right now 41 states, let's expand that. Go to TonyPerkins.com and find out how you can partner with us in this ministry. All right, as we were talking about earlier in the program, we started the planning for this meeting, working with Bill Dallas of United in Purpose. We thought we might have 400, maybe 500 leaders. Well, as it turned out, over 1,000 came to the New York City, and many had to be turned away. This strong response is evidence of the widespread recognition that America is in deep trouble. I think deep spiritual trouble. There were scores of pastors in attendance, and I want to give you their perspective on the meeting. Joining me now is the senior pastor of Village Parkway Baptist Church in San Antonio, Texas, Pastor Steve Branson. Steve, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's good to be with you again.
Are you still in New York, or are you back in the Lone Star State?
I am still in New York. I took the day off. I went a 10-mile hike, and I just finished a 20-mile bike ride on the Hudson River. I've had a good day, but I'm tired.
You know, I would imagine. I would imagine. Well, let's talk a little bit about yesterday's gathering. I want to get your perspective after gathering together with those evangelical leaders and hearing for 90-plus minutes Donald Trump and his exchange with leaders over a very variety of topics.
I was impressed by the number of people that were there, and I was impressed that Donald showed up and gave us as much time as he did. So I'm hoping a lot of good came out of that for everyone. But for me, two things troubling still, that when I go back home to talk to my church and others in San Antonio, that will still bother me. The problem that everybody in like my church and those I encounter in Texas has is they're just not real thrilled with Donald. I had a lady, Mary McIntosh, very crusty old lady, and I can't say everything she said to me Sunday at church, either publicly or privately, because the language is a little salty. But the attitude was the petulant child needs to go to timeout. And that's I have trouble with people because that's all they hear from him is his attitude coming through. So nothing yesterday is going to – I'm going to be able to go back and – so he told us this, and he told us this. because that stands out so strong. And I know that the Apostle Paul is probably the best there was at battling cultural things. And he told Timothy just in that last letter, you can't be quarrelsome. You have to be kind to everybody before anybody will ever hear your message. And so I wish we could have addressed some of those types of things yesterday. That didn't happen. And the other thing that is going to be troubling, because I go back to a military church, there's, as much as he said he would protect us from religious freedom, he didn't address the question you asked, nor even Kelly Shackelford, about how he'll protect our soldiers from the sexual things that are going on right now in our military. Because my relationship with Sergeant Monk, even Chaplain Wes Motter, I've seen two of the finest men you've ever met deeply hurt by what the president's doing on some of these sexual issues, and it's taking a toll on our troops. I lost three or four members who retired early because they couldn't deal with the military anymore because of the forcing down of the sexual issues that are going on.
Right.
Trump didn't really address that enough. I can go back and tell people he's going to protect you and he's going to watch over you. So those are a couple of my negatives that I had, but I thought overall it was a great meeting. He answered a lot of good questions. I like some of his ideas, but I'm still troubled by those kind of things. So, I mean, I'm of the opinion, never Hillary, no matter what, but I'm just not real excited about Trump.
Well, and I think that's where this was the beginning of that conversation, because I'm with you. I asked the question, and I asked it because of all the work we have done with the military, and I asked whether or not he would reverse, and I listed a number of the policies, the social engineering that the Obama administration has conducted in the military, and he basically said he was going to rebuild the military. He said he was going to listen to the military leaders, on a number of issues. I don't think he has gotten down into the real policy implications of so many of these things. And this is where I'm hoping that we'll see continued influence by social conservative leaders who do know the policies, and that he will listen to them as he shapes his path forward, not only as a candidate, but obviously if he's successful as the next commander-in-chief. Steve,
well, go ahead. I'm sitting in a lobby hotel, so. But one of the things that's concerning, I go back because I'm in New York City with one of my best friends. He flew in and we went bike riding today, and he said, "Steve, I can't get past the attitude I keep seeing on television."
But you saw the attitude was a little bit different there in person than it was on TV.
But the television is what everybody's seeing.
Right.
And I don't know how anybody conveys to him that that's having a big impact on a lot of our evangelical people who sit at home watching this. I hear this all the time at my church, and they're all excited that I got to come up here, and everybody's going to be wanting to hear from me when I get back home. In fact, they've been emailing me and texting me. Literally, my emails are running crazy right now because everybody wants to know what I think when I get back home. And I'm gonna have some good things to say, but they're so concerned about the stuff how they see him react to people and cut and attack and things like that, and that bothers them.
Right.
So, it's coming from an evangelical standpoint like we do. Those kind of things speak to character and everything else, so it has a concern. And I'm hoping that maybe through the influence of evangelicals, and he gave us that yesterday, that maybe we can find some of that stuff down. I don't know if you can change a man who's 70, but it really would help and would have an impact even on our church people, because they're looking for somebody who's going to stand up and do some of the things he's saying.
Right.
They'd like to.
Hey, Steve, we're going to have to leave it there. Up against a break. Have a good trip home.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. One of the places we'll visit on our spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon is the United States Marine Corps Memorial, also known as the Iwo Jima Memorial, built in 1954, and the largest bronze statue in the world. Stephen McDowell, who's the president of the Providence Foundation, a historian, will join us all along the way, answer questions, talk about the people, the places, and the events in our nation's capital, and then on to Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington. In addition, we'll go to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown for those who want to join us for this separate trip, which just precedes the Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon tour. For all the information on either of these tours, just visit us on the website, spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, this is in September. Go to the website, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
A quick trip to Aunt Helen's unexpectedly became an extended stay, and you're without enough of your medication. It's good to know you have real-time access to a national network of board-certified doctors with just a phone call. MD Live is non-emergent medical care 24/7, fitting your schedule. No forms to fill out and no waiting room, because all you need is your non-narcotic medication. HCBenefits.com. That's HCBenefits.com.
Marquis Laughlin is founder of Acts of the Word Ministry and host of the radio and online show The Moral Dilemma. He challenges believers to develop a biblical worldview through dramatized illustrations and interpretive readings of the Bible.
They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among these were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah.
Marquis Laughlin is sure to be an entertaining speaker this year at the annual AFA Retreat at the Cove, October 3rd through 6th. Space is limited to 400 attendees, so make your plans soon. Get more information at afafoundation.net. Register by calling 800-950-2092, option 1, followed by option 2. It's the annual Retreat at the Cove in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of North Carolina at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. And we hope to see you there.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at TPerkins. All right, you've heard a little, different perspectives from different, you've had kind of the political leaders, conservative leaders, you have the members of Congress, you've had pastors kind of all giving their perspective on this gathering with Donald Trump. And I want to hear from you now. What, if anything, can Donald Trump do, you believe, to connect with conservative Christian voters? All right. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, the number to call if you want to get in the conversation. Let me just say, look, I respect all views here. I have a lot of friends who, some very good friends, good Christian friends, who I have a lot of respect for, that are, I've taken a position they would never vote for Trump. Now, I've disagreed with them on that. You have to look at what our alternatives are here. You have two choices, really, before you can vote: Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. Now, as an individual, in the primary, I got involved early, not my organization, me personally, endorsed Ted Cruz, campaigned for him around the country because I believed he was the best one to lead our country forward. Didn't work out. But I want to know, and that's part of what this conversation was communicating to him what we think Donald Trump needs to do to build that relationship and connect with social conservative voters, which are going to be critical to his election. And we talked about this on Monday with Chris Wilson on just the numbers of evangelicals in terms of voters that he's going to need to succeed. I mean, he's going to have to exceed the percentages that Mitt Romney had in 2012. He's going to those numbers. He's going to have to do better than that. And right now in the polling, he's not. So he's got to work at this. And I think, it was interesting because we ran out of time there with Pastor Steve Branson, but that was one of the things I heard from a number of people that were in yesterday's gathering as I walked around kind of talking to different ones who were there. He said, he's different in person than he is on TV. And part of that is showmanship, but also part of it is how the media characterizes people. I mean, they have the ability to take, you know, one clip or, you know, a clip here, a clip there when somebody is saying or doing something and begin to build an image, a negative image in some cases. But anyway. All right, 866-372-7234. We're going to go to the phone lines, and let's go to Alabama where Becky is on the line. Becky, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. I would just like to say, you know, I think the Lord hadn't changed his mind. The Lord has made a decision, and the best thing Donald Trump can do would be to get on his knees and listen to the Lord, not listen to what Donald's thinking. And we, none of us need to listen to what we're thinking. We need to listen to what the Holy Spirit's thinking. And, you know, I think there that would be the breakthrough for him,
yeah,
would be to listen to the Lord.
Well, and that I'm glad you brought that up, Becky, because that was actually something that we did yesterday a couple of times in this session that we had was prayer. In fact, Dr. Jack Graham, Prestonwood Baptist Church, closed out yesterday's session in prayers. We all got on our knees and prayed for the country. So you are absolutely right. And let me just underscore once again, I say it often, but I don't guess I can say it too often, and that is we recognize that America's problems are not political. Actually, our political problems are symptoms of our spiritual problem. Now, we've reached such a low point, though, in our moral condition, spiritual condition, that our political condition is so bad that now it's become difficult to exercise the very thing that can bring the nation back on track. That is religious freedom. That is our ability to live according to our faith. That's at risk. And so what now, I think Christian leaders who understand what's happening in our culture are simply looking for leaders who will stop the attacks on their faith. I mean, just today, you know, we're going to probably talk about this tomorrow, about California and churches being forced to fund abortions in their health care plans. And the federal government okay with it, giving it a green flag. Anyway, 866-372-7234. Becky, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. Let's go to Missouri, where Terry is on the line. Terry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, sir, and I appreciate what you're doing there. I just may take issue with just something you just said.
All right, go ahead.
Not to be contentious, but, you know, the church has thrived under persecution. So I don't think necessarily it's religious liberty that the church needs to thrive. I think it's that genuine repentance. And we've seen in the history the church has thrived under the persecution. But
I'm not going to cut you off. I want to address that because that's one that I hear quite often. And I just want to give a little point of maybe explanation from a historical perspective. That is true, Terry. The church has thrived under persecution when it was growing. But when it's been in retreat and receding, it has not. So there's a difference. I think what we've seen in America is that Christianity in its practice, in its orthodoxy, has been in retreat, and the persecution is kind of driving it out. And now it may reach a point where you have a purging and people who truly want to practice their faith in a genuine way will then be rebuilding and facing that persecution, and it will grow. But I think right now we're seeing it in kind of a retreat. So there is a difference between the two. But go ahead, Terry.
And I agree, you know, that we have to have a turn back, a repentance, and a renewal, and a reawakening to what made our country great. And that's when our founding fathers, I believe, in earnest prayer and seeking God's will, was inspired by the Lord to craft those founding documents that proclaim our freedom. And I really believe that that was done because there was a time such as this was coming when we would be under extreme opposition, and that the Lord had provided us a way of escape well in advance with how those founders crafted those documents. Now, what's the reason for that, though? I think the reason is for the awakening that needs to take place in these last days. But I'm extremely fearful on our religious leaders, it seems like it's almost the story told again of how Israel dealt in the Old Testament. When the enemies were surrounding them, they decided to make alliances with the other nations that weren't godly nations and agreed God's heart because they weren't turning to him for his provision. And I think that's what we need to do today is turn to the Lord for his provisions. He's already prepared a constitution with a way of escape. But if we try to make an alliance with those who are in opposition to the Lord, then we're not going to get the Lord's provision. We will definitely get the Lord's judgment.
Well, I don't disagree with you let me process this, Terry, because with what you're laying out there, spiritually speaking, I agree with you. But we are here at a point where we, as American citizens, we're going to have a choice in who we vote for. Now, you know, I'm critical of those who did not get involved in the primary and try to help get one of the many candidates we had who were God-fearing, truth-honoring servants. And there were a number of them in the 17 that originally started the process. But now we're down to two. This is our process. Now, are you advocating, Terry, and I'm just asking you honestly, are you saying that Christians shouldn't vote, or what do you say?
No, I think we've allowed the media to frame the conversation, which mm-hmm. is so inaccurate. Donald Trump is a presumptive nominee. There's so many conservatives that are going to be at the national convention that are looking for a restoration, and I think the Free the Delegate movement is a way that the Lord has provided for us to make a move to honor him and to take a stand for what we believe in, and that's the freedom of religion that's guaranteed by our Constitution.
I'm going to be a delegate at the convention. I've been talking to a number of people, and I think that there's not much organization behind that, and quite frankly, I don't see how that happens. I think that's more really, I think it's been generated more by talk radio in terms as an option. I really think we're down to two options, Terry. I think we have what the Democratic Party has put forward and what the Republican Party, you know, it's going to be a formality really at the convention, put forward, neither of which I would have ever chosen. However, given the choice that we have, the way I see it, and I think the way many of the leaders who came there yesterday see it, who have not endorsed Donald Trump, and probably many of them probably will not vote for him, may support him, but they're probably not going to endorse him, is that if we can get him to understand these issues and come to a better understanding of them where he would advocate for these things, as well as, you know, as I said last night on Megyn Kelly, we're different. Evangelicals, Christians in this process, are not just a special interest group. Yes, we want to influence the process, but we have to be a witness to the truth. So it's more challenging because we're citizens of God's kingdom first and foremost. We have dual citizenship. This one down here is temporary, and we certainly don't want to tarnish the eternal citizenship by misusing this temporary citizenship. But Terry, thanks so much for the call, and look, welcome to call anytime. I appreciate you listening and being a part of Washington Watch. All right, we're going to work in. Got a lot of phone calls here. Want to try to work in some more. Let's go. Well, we're going to stay in Missouri, and we're going to talk to Tim. Tim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for taking my call. One of the things I think would help Trump is if he got a good conservative vice president, which I think, my opinion, would be Cruz. I don't know if he would consider that on either side, but like you said, we cannot just say, okay, I'll just stay home and not do anything, because staying home is a vote.
Right, it's a vote. It's a vote for the other side.
Yeah, basically, yeah, because you got to get in there and you got to vote.
Right.
And if you don't, you could be helping Clinton.
Right.
You know, I don't like Trump, and to tell you the truth, I had an eerie feeling that he was going to win from the beginning. But I still voted for Cruz.
I didn't. I didn't think he was going to win. You know, I know I had met with him, and he said, we're going to win this. I didn't think he would. And he is different in person. He does not have his – the persona that's been created in the media is not the same as he is. He actually shows some humility. He certainly did yesterday. But, Tim, I would just want to say I think you're absolutely on point. In fact, I've communicated this, multiple times yesterday in media interviews. I think that vice presidential pick is going to be critical. This is the reason I stated it, is because Donald Trump doesn't have a track record. He doesn't have a track record on policy issues because he's never held public office. In fact, you know, his actions would say that his positions he's held in the past have been counter, like on the life issue and other things. So it's going to be critically important that he has a running mate who does have a track record on these issues, a solidly conservative track record, and someone that I think has the confidence of the evangelical community. And I too think Ted Cruz, I don't think that's going to happen. Pretty certain that's not going to happen, but I do agree with you. I think that would be the best pick. All right, I want to try to work in one more call, but only got about 30 seconds. Let's go to Texas. Is this Pearl?
Hi, Tony.
Yes, go right ahead. 30 seconds.
Thank you so much. Tony, it sounds to me like you are trying to apologize for Trump and telling us that what we've seen in Trump's persona was created by the media. No. The insults, the foul language, the person, Trump is Trump and has always been him. I mean, we know his record. His life has been an open book for everybody to see. People know who this person is, you know, and we cannot unite to him and sacrifice truth and sacrifice the spirit of Jesus, who actually divided people. Who actually came to the world to divide?
So let me. We're almost out of time. Is there anything he could do that would gain your support?
Well, I very much agree with Becky, your first caller, and I think that besides telling us that he came to Jesus, that should also show. I mean, when I came to the Lord, everybody knew about it, and my life changed, and my language changed. And we would have to see that, and actually he would apologize.
All right. Hey, I got to leave it there. We're up against, not up against something. We're at the end of the show. Thanks so much for calling. Folks, sorry I didn't get to the rest of the calls, but you know what? I have a feeling we're going to continue to be talking about this election for 129 days. All right, folks, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to be back again tomorrow night, Lord willing, and I hope you will as well. Until then, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you could do, prayed, prepared, taken your stand, well, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.